How are you?
Hi.
Going to open this meeting of the House Health and Human Services Committee. And we're going to go a little bit out of order. I want to open a work session on House Bill 2462. Sandy, we have amendments.
Yes, we do, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, 2462. We heard on Wednesday, as you recall, this was the bill that required the Oregon Health Plan participant to be an Oregon resident. At that time, there was conversation about changing the statement requirement from 3 to 2. We have the dash threes in front of us that do exactly that for two statements on forms provided by the Department of Human Services, each signed by a current resident.
So it gets rid of the sworn and it lowers the number to 2, and everybody just happy as can be, right? Okay.
And also, this bill does have a prior reference to Ways and Means.
So I would entertain a motion on the dash 3 amendment.
So moved.
Representative Tomei moves the dash 3 amendment to House Bill 2462. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Hearing none, the dash 3s are adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2462 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Representative Tomei moves House Bill 2462 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion?
Representative? Mr. Chair, has the department seen these amendments and that they're... Don't want to add anything more.
Jim, for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Jim Edge, the acting assistant administrator of OMAP. Yes, we've seen the amendment. We're okay with it. We're fine with this bill.
Thank you, Jim.
Mr. Chairman, I assume this is a legal driver's license.
Representative Anderson, I don't even want to go there.
Some of our new bills coming out of judiciary will take care of it, I hope.
Yeah, that's outside of the scope of this committee. So thank goodness for that. Any further discussion? Seeing none, clerk call the roll.
Representative Anderson.
Aye.
Senator Barker.
Excused.
Senator Goldman.
Excused.
Senator Montanaro.
Aye.
Senator Tomei.
Aye.
Excused. All right. House Bill 2462, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. And I'll close the work session on House Bill 2462 and open a work session on House Bill 2641. Sandy.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2641. Is imposing financial responsibility requirements for inpatient hospital services on certain enrollees of the Oregon Health Plan within specific circumstances. You have dash one amendments. You will notice on the bill that there was reference to the Oregon Health Plan standard coverage. We have removed that language and changed it to just medical assistance programs in two different places. Also attached, you should have a fiscal impact. Yeah, fiscal impact statement on the original bill. This bill also has a prior reference to Ways and Means. The department has indicated that there will be a fiscal impact of including some additional positions, and there are a couple of folks here who want to speak to the amendment.
Okay, Jim.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Again, for the record, I'm Jim Edge, the acting assistant administrator of OMAP. This bill would provide that after 2 ER visits for non-emergencies, that subsequent ER visits would not be paid for by the Oregon Health Plan. We agree with the concept of reducing inappropriate ER usage. We have a few concerns with the bill, and I'll just put those on the record. In some geographic areas, some situations, the ER room may be an individual's only access to health care. Also, in some situations, the third visit, the third ER visit or subsequent visits maybe for a legitimate emergency concern, and the way this bill is written, the visit would still not be paid for. The bill also now in this revision applies to both the OHP Plus and OHP Standard clients, which means that the federal government is going to give it much closer scrutiny than they would have when it only applied to Standard. And we think it's quite likely, given the way that's written, that it will not get CMS approval. But if you instruct us to, we would ask that question and try to get an answer from CMS. But our concern is that it probably would not pass scrutiny with CMS because of these concerns I've just mentioned.
But and fully understanding that, I we've never really asked the question, and this would allow us to ask the question and find out from CMS what would be allowable. And I guess my purpose in this is to ask the question, so we can find out what we can do to modify ER usage that would pass muster the federal government. So the chair, I don't think, was assuming immediate blessing of this by CMS, but to begin the process of trying to make determination in this particular aspect of the delivery system. Representative Anderson.
Yeah, if this is turned down, do we have to then wait 2 years to write new legislation? Can it be changed by administrative rule?
Well, a lot of things could be done by administrative rule, I think, and what I would assume would happen, that we would get a report back from CMS as to if this turned down, what would be allowable, and then it would be a matter of a decision of OMAP and the e-board and as to whether we went forward with something or not. Fairly accurate, do you think?
Yes, I think that that's reasonable. If it got turned down, we could talk about other options.
Right. But it's just, you can't get an answer unless you ask a question, and there's some things we've just never asked a question on. So, any other questions of Jim? Thank you, Jim. Oh, just a second, Representative.
Okay, I'm just sort of trying to work this out in my mind. So, Jim, if a person went a third time then and the Oregon Health Plan wasn't going to pay for it, and if this person were indigent, then the hospital would just absorb the cost. Am I correct in that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Tomei, that's correct, yes. So there would be, in a sense, a cost shift if that occurred.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Sure. Is the hospital in that situation able to, because it is not an emergency situation, turn the patient away?
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, generally, no. Emergency room visits in hospitals, if you've been to an emergency room recently, they're not inclined to turn people away. There are long waiting times to be seen in emergency rooms, but until they at least assess for the urgent nature of a visit, they don't turn people away.
Any other questions? Thank you, Jim. Bruce.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Bruce Bishop, appearing on behalf of the Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems on House Bill 2641. We understand the purpose of the bill is to create deterrence to inappropriate emergency room use, and we support that goal. The state invests a lot of money in managed care, which is really designed to put people into appropriate care settings in order that emergency room services can be reserved for those who need that level of care. And emergency rooms are expensive places for hospitals to operate, and having people there inappropriately is also very expensive. So to the extent that this bill seeks to deter people from inappropriate use of the emergency room, that's a goal that we would support and as part of the Oregon Health Plan.
Any questions? Representative Tomei.
Thank you. So, Bruce, I posed the question to Jim. So isn't the hospital concerned that they would have to absorb these costs? As Jim was saying, it would be a cost shift to the hospital?
Mr. Chair, Representative Tomei, absolutely. And there are huge cost shifts to hospitals now in the reimbursement system that the state uses for paying for hospital care. We are being substantially under-reimbursed, not only for emergency room services, but for inpatient and outpatient services. But emergency room services are a very expensive level of care. And to the extent that we can encourage people to use those services appropriately, we think we should do that. Not saying that we like the fact that we will have to provide the care and not get paid for it, but that's a policy that the state is consciously following in a number of areas now as a way of providing services to people.
Oh, so you see this as a deterrent, so possibly people would be less likely to use emergency room once they realize that they are responsible for the cost, even if they're indigent?
Mr. Chair, Representative Tomei, yes, because the state is paying managed care entities a lot of money for creating appropriate care services rather than inappropriate care. And if people are going to the emergency room inappropriately, then there should be some, you know, some effort by the managed care entity to get appropriate levels of care to them so that they can go to the physician's office or other care centers instead of going into the emergency room.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative
Mr. Chair. Bruce, what's your opinion of, or what's your thinking as to the IPA's managing care, is fully capitated care? Are they absorbing most of the indigent people, getting them really used to seeing a primary care physician and not going to the emergency room? Is that starting to work?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I think the answer is it depends. It works better in some communities than it works in others, but those organizations are both professionally and contractually obligated to make those arrangements, and they're at risk if the consequences of their actions don't see the appropriate service for people. So those models are designed to accomplish that purpose, and mm-hmm. if they don't do it, then they suffer the financial consequences of that.
There's also the point that under the current system, about 30% of those folks are being served on a fee-for-service basis, so the FCHIPs aren't managing them. With the proposed remake, the percent of fee-for-service is going to decrease dramatically, so more of these folks will be managed, and first shot at ER is totally inappropriate in that case, because they will have a relationship with primary care physician. So, any other questions of Bruce? Thank you, sir. Anybody else want to speak? Committee will stand at ease for a moment. reconvene the committee after having totally legal conversations with members of my committee, because at no point did we have a quorum. There are some concerns, but I think I would... We need to ask a question, and I would like to proceed on that basis, so I would entertain a motion on the Dash 1 amendments. Mm-hmm. Representative Anderson moves a Dash 1 amendment to House Bill 2641. Is there any Representative Mona Sanderson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't like this bill at all, just because... the hospitals are going to really get it, and we'll have to take responsibility for paying. We just come up with a new plan that we passed out of the House, which the Oregon Health Plan members will need to be in a managed care situation. And my preference would be to have the managed care system for our Oregon Health Plan clients start working for a while before we jump into all of a sudden not paying for a person who's going to show up at the emergency room more than two times. I know many clients who are patients who don't have a primary care physician. I think it's going to take a while before we can get everyone into a managed care, into our new system that we're proposing, which I am very excited to see implemented. But after talking with the chair, we do need to make the statement to CMS. And this bill will allow that. I wish that the bill could have been written a little bit differently. It will save the Oregon Health Plan money, but it will really cost hospitals a lot more because they're going to see these patients anyway. So I am going to give a courtesy yes for the chair, and probably vote no. Well, no, it's going to Ways and Means.
Mr. Chair, I have similar reservations to Representative Mona Sanderson, but I will give you a courtesy vote also.
I appreciate that.
Mr. Chair, won't it take a while to run through CMS?
Oh, yes.
To give us a little opportunity to get the plan into action. So.
Going through normal channels, I doubt if we would have an answer to this this year. It would probably be sometime in 2004. So just a rough guess. Maybe longer sometimes, so. Are there any...
just one other statement. I agree with the Representative Mona Sanderson that I hate to see the hospitals hurt, but I think in the long run we are going to be tightening things down so that they will be helped, and that's what I'm looking forward to in the longer range.
Yeah. Are there any objections to the Dash 1 amendments? Seeing none, the Dash 1 amendment... to 2641 is adopted.
Help me. I would like to move this to the floor with the Dash 1 amendments and a subsequent referral with a due pass and a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Representative Anderson moves House Bill 2641 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? I could, but I won't. Call the roll.
Representative Anderson.
Aye.
Representative Barker.
Excused. Excused.
Representative Mona Sanderson.
Aye.
Representative Tomei.
Aye.
Representative Westland.
Excused. Aye. House Bill 2641, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. And I'll close the work session on 2641. And I am going to open an informational meeting for the purposes of receiving a report from the Task Force on Paid Family Leave. Diane and guests. Thank you for your patience, Representative.
Absolutely. And good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
I am State Representative Diane Rosenbaum, and I'm here today as a having served as a member of the 2001 Interim Task Force on Paid Family Leave and Unemployment Insurance, and I'm very glad that you're giving us an opportunity to report on this topic, because I think you'll find that the results of our work very interesting, and it's really something that is of significance to many, many Oregonians and their families. We're going to kind of go back and forth and present the information, but I wanted to just give you a little background that, as I'm sure everybody knows, Oregon has really led the way nationally in having some of the first parental leave and family leave laws in the country long before they were national laws and done at a federal level. And these have been great benefits, but the problem is a lot of people have been unable to take advantage of them because they simply can't afford to go without a paycheck during the time that they're allowed to be gone. And so that is how this whole topic has come to the fore. And for me, it really became very immediate because I had a constituent whose name was Christine, who was a young mother, had just had her second child, and contacted my office and eventually started coming to Salem to tell her story of having her first child and then having to go back to work long before she was ready to, when she really wanted to stay home, but her husband was out of work, and she would get tears in her eyes telling this story because she felt so bad about having to leave to go back to work, but simply couldn't afford to stay home. And that really, I think, is one of so many stories that you hear of people, either young parents or people with older relatives or parents that are ill and need somebody to stay with them. And so really, I think this is a topic that is of huge importance to our constituents, and there is luckily something we can do about it, and that's what we're going to talk about today. So Tamara Brickman is staff, and she'll tell you a little about the role she played and start in on some of the background.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tamara Brickman. I am the legislative coordinator for the Oregon Employment Department, and as such was the staff to the Task Force on Paid Family Leave and Unemployment Insurance, as the bill that established the task force, which Representative Rosenbaum will talk to you a little bit more about in a few moments, basically placed the responsibility for staffing the task force with the Employment Department, and that is how I became staff of the committee. Just wanted to start out with a little bit of background on where the paid leave conversation grew from, and it grew out of the experience with the Family Medical Leave Act and other acts within states, and primarily in the state of Oregon, the Oregon Family Leave Act. Just a little bit of background on the Family Medical Leave Act, which I'm sure most of you are very aware and knowledgeable about. It was adopted signed into law in 1993, and essentially the federal the Family Medical Leave Act applies to employers with 50 or more employees. And what it does is it grants eligible employees of those employers, and the eligibility requirements are explained in the report on page 9. Didn't want to go too much into detail. It grants those eligible employees up to 12 weeks of leave, of unpaid leave, during any 12-month period. And the reasons under the Family Medical Leave Act that a person can take that leave is for the birth and care of a newborn, for the placement with an employee of a son, daughter, or daughter that's been adopted or placed for foster care, to care for an immediate family member, and it's defined as spouse, child, or parent with a serious health condition, or to take medical leave when the employee is unable to work because of a serious health condition. And also, as part of the act, a commission was formed on family and medical leave to study the results of the Family Medical Leave Act and do some reports, and then I will tell you a little bit more about that in just a second. In Oregon, as Representative Rosenbaum referred to, we had in place before the Family Medical Leave Act several laws that allowed for paid leave for certain purposes. And they were enacted, there were a series of bills that were enacted over different sessions that provided for that leave, and then in 1995 they were all combined into one statute, and that became known as the Oregon Family Leave Act. And in Oregon, it applies to employers with 25 or more employees. And under that, again, there are eligibility requirements for an employee to meet. And they are entitled to up to 12 weeks of leave within any one-year period. And then also, in addition to the 12 weeks, a woman who uses pregnancy leave, that's also under the Oregon Family Leave Act, can also be granted an additional 12 weeks to care for a sick child. Now, OFLA is the Oregon Family Leave Act, entitles employees to use accrued paid vacation leave. So they can use their accrued vacation leave while they are taking the 12 weeks. And then you can also use sick leave if you are taking the leave to care for a newborn. And that entitles women to use that, or men to use that as well. The purposes under the Oregon Family Leave Act for which a person can take leave are parental leave, to care for a newborn child or a newly adopted child or foster child. And then the leave has to be taken within a year following that event. A person can take leave for a serious health condition, for the employee's own serious health, or to care for a spouse, a parent, a child, a parent-in-law, or a same-sex domestic partner with a serious health condition. There is pregnancy and disability leave that can be taken by a female employee for the incapacity related to pregnancy or childbirth occurring before or after the birth of the child, or for parental leave. And then they can take leave to care for a sick child with an illness or injury that requires home care, but that is not a serious health condition. And so it was with this in mind that in 1999, as a result of a report from the commission that was established under the Family Medical Leave Act, that the paid family leave discussion evolved, primarily because the commission reported that most people who needed to take the leave, especially to care for newborns, couldn't afford to take it. So in the late 90s, a lot of states started adopting or enacting, not enacting, but actually introducing legislation to allow parents who were taking approved leave, either under the Family Medical Leave Act or under that state's Family Leave Act, to actually receive unemployment insurance benefits while they were on that leave. And as a result of that, and as a result of the study, the result of all the states introducing legislation and the study, President Clinton directed the Department of Labor to adopt regulations that would allow for that. There's a lot of technicalities as to why a state wouldn't be able to enact it without federal approval. So the federal Department of Labor actually promulgated a rule, and it became effective in 2000. Since then, no state has actually adopted or enacted what's called a baby UI statute. And in 2002, late 2002, President Bush directed the Department of Labor to put out a notice of proposed rulemaking to actually rescind those regulations that were adopted. So that's where the paid family leave discussion came into place. There are lots of options with respect to what states are doing, and Representative Rosenbaum is going to talk to you a little bit more about that.
So next, I wanted to just give a little more information, too, about why this is so important. And I talked about Christine, but I think, you know, as a result of the study that Tamara referred to, the facts are pretty striking. And so we now know that 78% of employees that said they've needed family leave and haven't taken it have not done so because they couldn't afford it. So it's overwhelmingly that's the reason that people don't take it. 88% of employees who needed family leave and didn't take it say they would have taken it if they had been able to receive some pay, even partial pay, while they were away from work. 9% of those who took leave report they were forced to go onto public assistance while on leave. So, you know, that's an even stronger reason, because taxpayers often are bearing the brunt when people are put in this position and have no choice. And likewise, employers are impacted because they lose trained, capable employees who would really like to stay at work but simply have to make a choice. We think that's a choice nobody should be forced to make, between taking care of a loved one and having a job. And then in 1997, 1 in 4 Americans had an elderly relative to take care of. I'm sure that that statistic is probably only going to get larger. And many reduced their work hours or took leave to take care of a parent. I think some of you may be experiencing that in your own lives. And the support for the idea of providing some sort of wage replacement embarrassment in this situation is pretty overwhelming. That studies have shown that 82% of women and 75% of men favored the idea of developing a new insurance program that would give families some income when people take family or medical leave. So the background of it is pretty clear that there is a need and there is support and that it's something that would benefit employers and employees both. Well, here in Oregon, this really began, I think, to hit home with the legislature last session in 2001, and the report details this for you, but there were several bills that were introduced, and I see now in looking back at them that both Representatives Tomei and Manas Anderson were sponsors of some of that legislation. The bill, the primary bill, there was a Senate version and a House version, called for time off up to 12 weeks, focusing at that time on time off after the birth or adoption of a new child, and looking at the Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund as a place where the funding source would come from, using the federal rule that Tamara had referred to. That bill did not actually get, I think it got on the Senate side a courtesy hearing only, never got a work session. I don't think it got a hearing on the House side at all. But what happened, because there was so much interest in this subject, and there really were several bills dealing with it, that a task force got created out of another bill in the business committee. And this task force, which was the one that our report comes out of, was charged with looking at the feasibility of providing paid leave after birth or adoption of a child and investigating funding mechanisms through unemployment insurance and other means. And it was a task force that included legislators from the Senate and the House, as well as people from the Commissions for Women, Commission on Child Care. It had business representatives and labor representatives, small business and large business, and nonprofits. So it really represented the whole spectrum of groups that would be affected by this. And when we started our work, we rapidly, looking at the situation that had developed and was getting worse, saw that unemployment insurance might not be the best mechanism to use for funding of this, because although it looked good the previous session, we were then heading toward having the highest unemployment rate in the nation, and we're needing to use unemployment for extended benefits and just to pay benefits, and so it no longer looked like a very appealing or likely place to turn. So we rapidly kind of set that aside and started to look at other funding mechanisms that were possibilities and seemed likelier. And luckily, there were some models nationally that we could look to see how that was working already and how it was proposed to work. So I think that brings us to Tamara, who will tell you a little bit about how the task force went about its work.
Well, the task force actually had three meetings, and in the meetings, basically, there was just a presentation of lots of facts and information that had been gathered primarily by myself in doing research. And coming upon a lot of research with this issue, I was able to locate a few experts in the area, especially experts that would be seen as coming from both sides, opponents and proponents. And so we brought forth an individual, Lisa Bell, who's actually known as a national expert on this issue, who is with the National Partnership for Women and Families. It's a nonprofit organization in Washington, D.C., and they are an organization that basically uses, and in the report it says, they use public education and advocacy to promote fairness in the workplace, and this is one of the issues that they see as a fairness issue. Another individual, who's also seen as a national expert from the human resource management side, is Deanna Gielak, and she actually represents an organization called, and it's a very lengthy title, the National Family Medical Leave Act Technical Corrections Coalition, and that was founded actually by the Society for Human Resource Management. And we also went to another nonprofit to explain some of the models that they have been seeing pop up across the United States, and that is actually an institute up in Seattle called the Economic Opportunity Institute, and Marilyn Watkins actually provided some information. So I was able to gather a lot of knowledge and research from these individuals, and interestingly, they all support the idea of paid family leave. It's just how they fund it and the mechanisms through which they would agree to have it funded are where they disagree and kind of they diverge from one another. Then what was really useful is they explained and gave some background on different models. And just as kind of a foundation for how some of these programs, paid family leave programs, are coming about, there are disability insurance models in five states. There are five states plus Puerto Rico that require employers to provide disability insurance for employees. And they're funded in different ways. Some of them are a split payroll tax between the employee and the employer. Some are funded completely by the employer. Some are funded completely by the employee. And then the actual eligibility for the programs differ from state to state, and the amount of benefits differ from state to state. And the states that actually have those programs, and it's all explained in detail in the report, are California, Hawaii, New Jersey, New York, Rhode Island, and then, of course, Puerto Rico is another one of them. And this provides kind of a foundation for a discussion that Representative Rosenbaum is going to talk to you about real quickly about what has happened in California with respect to a law that was recently enacted that basically built on this already existing infrastructure of their state disability insurance. And I'll let her talk to you about that.
And I also wanted to clarify that in addition to expanding our search for a funding mechanism, we also looked at the need for time off for other purposes than just birth or adoption of a new child, because we rapidly realized that so many people are now in the situation of having older family members and specifically parents that need care, that we really should be looking at that as well as a seriously ill family member of any age. So we really were looking at the whole gamut of needs to do with birth and adoption and when somebody is seriously ill or needs long-term care. So what was very exciting is that while this work was going on and we were doing this research, California actually acted and passed the first paid family leave law in the country. And I don't know how many of you are old enough to remember Dobie Gillis when it was a show on television, but I remember watching it when I was a kid. And you may remember this character, Zelda, the brainy friend of Dobie Gillis that was on the show. Well, Zelda is actually named Sheila Kuehl. She went on to become a California state senator and the chief sponsor of the paid family leave legislation that passed last August in California and will take effect next year. And so we really now will have a model to look to. And I wanted to tell you a little bit about what they did in their law. Beginning July 1st of 2004, almost all California workers will be eligible to take up to 6 weeks of paid time off after the birth, adoption, or foster care of a new child, or when a family member is seriously ill. And a family member by them is defined as a parent, child, spouse, or domestic partner. And as Tamara mentioned, California is one of the states that already has a disability insurance program that covers almost all employees in the state. So they're building on that and expanding to include family leave. Eligible workers will receive up to 55% of their wages for up to 6 weeks, and that amount is capped at $728 a week. The maximum benefit is based on the state's average weekly wage. The average worker will pay less than $3 a month, and that amounts to an estimated $27 a year for this benefit. Their program was originally proposed as being funded by a payroll tax that would be paid in equal amounts by employers and employees, but there was a lot of opposition to the employer tax, and in order to get it through, they actually changed it so that it's funded solely by an amount paid by employees. But it's such a nominal amount that it really did not take away from the support for it at all. In fact, I think most people are struck at how little it actually costs to provide it. There's a one-week waiting period before people can apply, and employers can require their employees to use a maximum of 2 weeks of vacation time before starting to take the paid family leave. 1 week of that can be used to cover the waiting period. So basically, that is how their law will work. And they will start collecting the funding amount in January of 2004, and then 6 months later, July 1st of 2004, people will become eligible to take time off. So what's great about that from our perspective is that we can see how it's working in another state close at hand and learn something from their experience. And I think that it'll be very interesting because it's hard to predict, you know, right now how many people will actually take advantage of it. And, you know, so when you try to do fiscal estimates, you're really guessing largely based on the number of workers there are in the workforce, but nobody really knows. So I think looking at what goes on there, we'll be able to have a better idea. I guess the next thing was to talk about legislation here and next steps that might happen here in Oregon. And I provided you a handout from the Oregon Women's Health and Wellness Act of 2003. We did put in a bill this session, House Bill 3080, a paid family leave legislation, which was modeled on California's law, also funded only by employees, providing up to 6 weeks off for birth or adoption of a child or when a family member is seriously ill. Our eligibility criteria were different in that bill because we didn't want to have a separate system that would be hard for employers to implement. We modeled it on the eligibility criteria for our paid family leave law that we already have in place. So if there have to be 25 or more employees for somebody to be able to take advantage of this, and we felt that that would deal with concerns from some of the smaller employers. That bill was referred to this committee. So far did not receive a hearing, but you know, we think that this is one of those ideas that really is not going to go away, that clearly the need is great and the interest is great, and so we're really pleased that you're giving us an opportunity today to talk about it. We also think that there are a lot of ways that we could deal with this without necessarily opening a full program. One would be a pilot project of some sort, particularly where there was an employer and an employee group that were interested in doing some kind of trial. At various times there's at least been talk in Washington, D.C. about making some funds available to fund pilot projects in this area. So there may be either that or even some private money that might be available to help subsidize this. So we think that, you know, it's really an area that needs much more discussion, that Oregonians and their families are going to be very interested in. And as the workforce and the population gets older, clearly that aspect of it, dealing with care of older family members, is going to become even more of an issue. So I think that's pretty much what we had. We also wanted to leave you a little time for questions if you had any. And Tamara, did you want to add something?
Just real quickly, I wanted to add, if you look at pages, I won't go into depth with them, but if you look at pages, well, basically, 14 through page 20, it provides you with examples of other types of legislation that have been introduced in other states and some actually adopted at the other mechanisms by which they're trying to deal with paid family leave. And an example is that expanded use of sick leave. Although in Oregon, under the Oregon Family Leave Act, we can use sick leave for pregnancy leave. Well, the state of Washington did enact last year a law that would allow employees to use their sick leave, accrued sick leave or other paid time to care for a child of the employee that's under the age of 18 who's sick. And they can also care for a spouse, a parent-in-law, or a grandparent under that same provision. And then also on the back, on page 20, there are programs that are specifically directed at parents, allowing parents to stay home with newborns, at-home infant care programs. And you actually passed a bill out of this committee to the Ways and Means Committee that would do such a thing. It's a little bit different model than they've been used in other states, because other states have actually funded these programs through general fund set-asides. This the bill that came came out of this committee would actually rely on additional monies coming available from the federal government and also for a waiver to allow the use of money for that purpose. And I understand that under the TANF reauthorization that's being considered in Congress, that they are looking at actually providing grant monies to states to set up programs to allow people receiving public assistance to stay home and care for children and to participate in child care and parent programs so that they can bond with their children. So I just wanted to close that there are other types of mechanisms through which you could provide the paid family leave as well.
I also wanted to mention that Representative Alan Brown was the chair of this task force and I think did want to be here with you today to present this report, but I think had some other priorities in Transportation Committee at the moment. So we would be happy to answer any questions about the report or anything.
Questions?
Wonderful.
Representative Mona Sanderson.
Comment. Tamara, you did a great job compiling this.
Thank you.
Yeah, and really I think it was the fact that the Employment Department was willing to staff this task force that made it possible to have it happen, and she did a great job. So I think this report is going to be a terrific resource for years to come.
Right. Hopefully soon.
Thank you.
Okay, well, once again, thanks for giving us the opportunity.
Thank you.
Go get Billy. Well, hopefully he's right outside. Okay, I'm going to close the informational meeting and open a work session on Senate Bill 470. Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and reconsideration of Senate Bill 470A be taken up immediately. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Chair requests unanimous consent that the motion on Senate Bill 470A do pass as amended to the floor be placed on the consent calendar, be reconsidered. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Chair requests unanimous consent that the motion to adopt the Senate Bill 470A-A5 amendments be reconsidered. Is there any objections? Hearing none.
Wait, no. You're going too fast for me now.
What we're doing is bringing the whole thing back into play, and we got to back out to
Yes. Yeah, I got you.
Okay. Any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. Committee, Senate Bill 478 is back before the committee. There are some concerns with the amendments. So now have we backed out? So right now we have the unamended bill.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, in the reconsideration of the bill as amended, and we took the amendments off in that reconsideration. What we have before the committee is the 470A, the way that it came to the committee when we had the first hearing. There were concerns about the A5 amendments, which is why we brought it back. And there had been no agreement to new language. So the stakeholders in the bill would have requested that the bill, Senate Bill 470A, be moved out of committee unamended.
So right now we're in a position, we have the unamended bill, so I would entertain a motion to move the bill as it is unamended.
470A,
right.
Yes.
Okay.
Wait, unamended, I thought you said.
No, it came to us
amended.
Okay. We're not going to amend it.
Okay.
So from our perspective, it's an unamended bill because we haven't amended it.
Okay.
Representative Dalton.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 470A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Dalton moves Senate Bill 470A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair, do we know that all parties involved are now in agreement that this bill is okay?
They are all here.
Do I see thumbs up?
I think there are some that would like to see other things, but this is what we have.
Yeah.
So, and the beauty of the legislative process is that we do this every 2 years. Or the horror of it, depending on how you look at it.
Okay.
So,
thank you.
Any further discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Aye.
Do we have a motion?
Yeah.
Excuse.
Aye.
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 Excused. Aye. Senate Bill 470, having received the constitutionally required majority, is declared passed. Do we want to put it back on the consent calendar?
Sure.
Representative Tomei moves Senate Bill 470 be placed on the consent calendar. Are there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. And I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 470, and seeing no further business, we are adjourned.
That's cool.
Thank you, Mr. Thank you.